Good morning, everyone, and we gladly welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study. And we are recording today from the North Star, and we're so glad that you could join us all. And our moderator today is Thomas from New York.
Okay, we will begin. So we'll start out with a hymn. All glory be to God Most High. And on the earth be peace. The angels sang in days of yore, the song that ne'er shall cease, till all the world knows peace. God's angels ever come and go, all winged with light and love. They bring us blessings from on high. They lift our thoughts above. They whisper, God is love. O longing hearts that wait on God, through all the world so wide, He knows the angels that you need and sends them to your side to comfort, guard, and guide. Awake and hear the angel song that bids all discord cease from pain and sorrow, doubt and fear. It brings us sweet release, and so our hearts find peace. So that is a hymn titled Carol. Hymn number 9 by the words were written by Violet Hay.
Very beautiful, a good antidote to what's about to come.
Yeah, this is a beautiful hymn. God's angels ever come and go, all winged with light and love. It's a perfect picture of reality. So if you think we have all kinds of messages being flying around that don't exactly sound angelic, it's good to have something like this so we can focus on and bring us back to the truth of the eternal truth that outshines and outlasts anything and everything else.
Reality.
Mm-hmm. Reality.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or the one language rather than all the babbling.
Right. Well, yeah. God knows the angels that we need, and He sends them as we need them. Or as we're ready for them, I guess.
Yeah. Really. That is when we're awake and ready to hear them.
Right.
Yes. I went back to what it was something that Karen had contributed a while ago from the BlissNet 91st Psalm, that He shall give His angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. This is another lovely promise. Read it again and again. Nothing could be more exquisite. He shall give His angels charge over thee. This is meant for you and me. Make this promise the subject of your thought every day for a month. Think about it. Realize it. Charge over thee. Think of this promise. Charge over thee. And your entire life will be changed. You will be uplifted. You are in charge of angels and will be safe. Guarded in all ways. Health, food, clothing, all the necessities of life, kept from fear of all kind, danger of all kind, a wonderful promise, a thought to keep one smiling, happy, well, strong, vital, young, day in and day out for the rest of your life. It couldn't be much better than that. And then this was something that Carrie contributed from an article. Let's see. It's called Angels by Iva Leinbarger. How joyful just to be still and listen for God's voice. We can hear it as we walk along the street, as we are busy with our household duties or in our offices, even while we turn the pages of an account book, or as we turn to speak to someone. However crowded or confused the place may seem, His angels of His peace are there to calm our thoughts. However silent and alone we may think we are, His angels of love are there to cheer us. So no one can plead lack of opportunity to learn of God when His angels are ever present, pointing us Godward, always turning us away from evil and materiality.
Sounds pretty good.
It's a good thing to think about in these days.
Yeah.
As Bruce said, to get our messages from God and not from everywhere else. It's pouring out all over the place.
Well, it's like the Hezekiah we had in the lesson. And when the Syrian king got and had all his people trying to shout and say horrible things to the people, your God, you know, is not going to help you. And we're basically over. And God sent an angel and then it silenced everything and sent him away.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah. The people were comforted by the words that Hezekiah spoke to them. Despite everything that Sennacherib was shouting at them.
Yes.
Taunting them.
In their own language.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I was reading somewhere about language is really an act of God. I mean, you can't say it's anything but that. It's just something that, I mean, if you think of the words and how many there are and the letters, and it would have to be an act of God.
Well, they come from consciousness.
Yes.
And God is our consciousness. So the ability to communicate with one another is a divine concept.
Yes, inspired.
So, Tom, did you have a hidden meaning anywhere in here?
Zero. So, I thought I'd mention a little bit about Violet Hay. I'd never heard of her before. Maybe other people have known her for a long time, but she's very significant in the Christian Science movement. So she wrote several hymns. This is one of them, obviously. I find it interesting. I don't know why, but in the hymnal, it shows her initials as VH. Doesn't say her name, Violet Hay. Not sure what that means. But she was first introduced to Christian Science in 1896. Spent some time in Boston. She actually saw Mary Baker Eddy from a distance, so guess she never met her. But she was from England, so she went back to England, and she was very significant in establishing Christian Science in Britain. And then she went to South Africa, and she introduced Christian Science to South Africa. She has done a various number of things for the Christian Science Church. So she was a practitioner, and she also, which is something I'm unfamiliar with, but it says that she was a participant in the hymnal updating in 1932, which maybe that's why Linda is always referencing the hymnal of 1932. I'm not quite sure what that meant, but anyway, the Long Year sells a biography of her, so it's interesting. So that probably is something we should add to our book collection. Anyway, there are some highlights about Violet Hay. She seems like a very special person.
Thank you.
She is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Do you have the book, Florence?
Yeah, it's not right here, but I do have a book about her, yeah. I think it's a Long Year.
Years ago, Mrs. Evans wrote a list of the significant early writers, you know, up until the 40s, and she was on that list, along with Violet Kersimer and, of course, McKinsey and McClellan.
Samuel Greenwood.
Yeah, Samuel Greenwood. A whole list of very significant writers, most of which you know because their writings are so beautiful. Certainly Ella Hoag and what was the other one? Louise Knight.
Louise Knight Weekly.
Right. She's got quite the name. Written beautiful articles. So thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. If she was involved with making that 1932 hymnal, you can see why her name was VH in there. It's hard to put your own name on things.
Yeah, probably so. Right.
So I'll say a little few things why I picked this poem or hymn. But in context of our story in the Tower of Babel, but, you know, because I think the Tower of Babel kind of gives us a choice in life of what we're looking to in terms of who guides our life, right? So it says here, all glory be to God Most High. They bring us blessings from on high, speaking of the angels. You know, this is clearly stating who we should be looking towards, you know, all longing hearts that wait on God, you know. So I thought that would be useful as an introduction to the Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. And then we can talk about what the people were thinking when they built it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So our topic today is the Tower of Babel. So our first question is, when did the story of the Tower of Babel occur?
Well, it was after Noah's Ark landed, and I would say it was about four generations after. Something like that, as far as a land goes.
I read two different things, 201 year and then 700 years after the flood. So we don't know for sure.
Yeah, it was three or four generations after Noah. Right?
Yes, that would make sense because Nimrod was his great great grandson.
Right. Great grandson.
Great grandson.
Oh, it was great grandson.
Okay. So go ahead and tell us who was in Nimrod.
All I knew was what you wrote, that he was the great grandson
of Noah.
Noah, yes.
He was the grandson of Ham and he was the son of Cush.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he was building the tower.
And those guys lived for like hundreds of years, according to Genesis. So it's hard to it's hard to estimate how many years.
Well, it does say here that in Genesis, it's in the Bible notes, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calna in the land of Shinar. And Shinar, as explained in Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, is a plain in Babylonia.
Yeah, I found it interesting. I looked up some of the definitions of Shinar. Intense negative emotion and experience of violence. Divided mind. A belief in two powers, evil as well as good, and the results thereof, and then the beginning of organized cities and civilization. And I guess it is now modern day Iraq. Which I thought was quite interesting, those definitions. I'm not even sure where I got them now, but anyway. And also from Carrie sent a really good article called The Tower of Babel by a Richard Berrall, January 1917 issue of the journal. He writes that Tower of Babel was not a general scheme, but was evolved exclusively by Nimrod and his personal following. Their express purpose to make for themselves a name would have no meaning were it not for the fact that they desired to exalt themselves above their brethren. And we have in this story the germ of that Lomania, which is a mental illness, which means delusions of grandeur, mm-hmm. so familiar in after history, and which has always set for itself the same impossible task of building to heaven upon a material foundation. And then this is you had found in Bicknell Young, which is sort of along those lines. I have it marked.
Yeah. Okay.
That's very relevant to our own ages. All this building up of these so-called great leaders for their own benefit.
Most definitely. That's why it's so timely for now.
Yes. Because mm-hmm. the government was tyranny. We changed it to tyranny.
Yeah. Exactly is what happened. When it's built on material foundations and personal gain and glory, it turns into tyranny. And when we look to government instead of to God for our answers, we are in deep trouble.
One of the things I found in the article entitled Electricity that Bicknell Young wrote, near the end of the article, is what kind of speaks to this. He says, we classify beliefs as good beliefs and bad beliefs. But when the bad beliefs claim to be good, when the worst claims to be the best, we have a claim of perversion. And that's really all you can call it, is perversion. And then he says, but this stage of error is the final or last stage of error, and it's ripe for destruction. Because claiming the Christ power, but lacking it, trying to build on a false foundation, lacking the power of spiritual discernment, in other words, not obeying God, the power of oneness with God, it cannot demonstrate its claims. But as Mrs. says, itself making its claims. And that's in Science and Health, page 286. Mm-hmm. So when a false worst idea claims to be the best, by making its claim, it is destroying itself.
Because it has nothing to base itself on, because it's godless. Mm-hmm. And that's all we need to know for the destruction of all these false systems that have been built up as Nimrod built the Tower of Babel. And we did read that, you know, there was a Greek philosopher that actually saw the tower when he was alive. So he said it, this isn't a fantasy. This actually existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I've read articles in the past where people have found what they say was the Tower of Babel, so that there seems to be some evidence that it actually existed.
Yeah.
Well, you can believe that it was there, because mm-hmm. why would somebody write it down? Go to the trouble of actually writing it down if it didn't actually happen.
Yeah. It's amazing that it preserved all this time, to teach us a lesson. But I just wanted to say, it said that Nimrod was becoming great in the earth. In other words, it looked like he might have been attracting a following. Mm-hmm. And the story of Babel starts with the fact that they had one language, one speech. So there was a sense of unity of a type, but it was a unity of following the leader Nimrod. In other words, it sounds like this guy has gotten everybody to go along with him. Well, that's a recipe for tyranny if there ever was one, because where's God in that picture? And the whole purpose of this flood that happened a few generations before was to eliminate sin.
Right.
That was the thing. And if you wanted to build this tower to escape some other type of flood, well, it didn't work, because the purpose was to eliminate sin. That's the tower that we stand on, the allness of God and the nothingness of evil. So instead of building a material structure, let's build a structure based on what the purpose of this flood was all about, the omnipotence of God and the nothingness of sin.
And that's what you see today with all of the people, you know, so worried about climate and this and that. They're looking to human means and ways to solve a problem when the only way to solve any problem is, as one of these writers said, we might be better off, but we have not been made better. And eventually we have to be made better because the better off hasn't worked. We're all better off materially, perhaps, but not all, but some. But to be better is the goal and the aim, more spiritual.
Well, thank you. I just want to say that, so let's say we're moving on to question three now. What is the reason for building the tower, which Bruce brought up so well, and Mary? So please go ahead, now the speaker.
Is Craig trying to talk?
Oh, I was about to say that, adding to what Bruce said, the Bat Tower was a human means for a symbol of greatness, and it says in the parable, I remember, I think Christ Jesus said, the man was, he swept his house clean and was healed, but then afterwards, so many devils came in because he didn't fill it up with God or truth or you know, or spiritual understanding. And so the end was worse than the beginning. And this is like when they just try to replace God with all these material things, and as it says, using their imagination instead of their spiritual understanding, they wind up with something very gross and bad.
It was more of a human ambition and love of power. It's almost like taunting God. And then Nimrod, because he was such a mighty man, so-called, felt like, okay, come on, let's build something. We're going to reach as high as heaven. You know, taunting God, really. So.
Well, thank you. That's very significant. So it says here, both in Genesis and Chronicles, that Nimrod was mighty upon the earth. So he seemed like a very strong person that people would look up to. And this is the reason, repeating again why I picked the hymn to start out with, is in some sense this can be a simple choice. Are we looking to God or we are looking to a man?
Thank you.
Well, it kind of reminds you of a false sense of wealth that we see often in our society, where we build these huge homes and go on these extravagant travels and all this stuff that's just building up matter, and it's empty. It's empty and it's shallow because it's godless and it doesn't get us anywhere.
Thank you.
One of the things in the Bible notes, and also I found it on Matthew Henry, was that after the flood, God wanted man to, you know, move out and populate the world and all that kind of stuff. And they didn't want to do that. They wanted to stay safe, what they thought was safe up there and unified and all that. And so they didn't obey the go forth and it says, and that it might cultivate a great part of the earth, enjoy its fruits after a plentiful manner. But they didn't want to do that. Instead, they built this tower so they could not be disunified, according to Nimrod. And so they weren't obeying God to go forth and populate the earth in the, if we want to look at it in that particular sense, but they weren't obeying God anyway, if they were looking to a man and not to God.
Oh, thank you. So I want to take a moment just for all of our listeners on the call. This is a very short story. It's nine verses. So I put together a synopsis of it, and I'll just read through that. So this is the whole story. The whole world had one language and a common speech. People moved eastward and settled in the plain of Shinar. They made bricks and baked them. They decided to build a city. And they built a tower that reached to heaven to avoid being scattered across the world. The Lord observed that in their human activities, they were not constrained from doing ungodly things. The Lord confused their language so they would not understand each other. The Lord scattered them over the whole earth.
Yeah, that's interesting that through their disobedience, they became confused and misled. And I read somewhere what one person thought that the reason they built the tower was so that they could survive the next flood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And that, notwithstanding that God had promised that he would never bring another flood. So in their disobedience, they didn't believe what God promised them.
And they also weren't willing to do what it takes to not have a flood in the first place.
Right.
Exactly.
To actually be obedient to God.
Well, I like Mrs. Eddy's definition of Bible in 581 of Science and Health. She says it's self-destroying error, a kingdom divided against itself, which cannot stand. Material knowledge. He also says it's the higher false knowledge built on the basis of evidence obtained from the five corporeal senses, the more confusion ensues, and the more certain is the downfall of its structure.
Thank you.
I would like to add some the Tower of Babel. This is Andrea from Idaho, and the Tower of Babel story has always been for me something that reinforces the human concept that man has to fight against God to have anything good, which I've noticed prevalent in a lot of movies and things like that. That this concept that if we have anything good, God's going to take it away from us. We can't trust him to have anything good, or something along those lines. And it's a very subtle thing. I noticed in one of, I think it's Bicknell Young's that was recently sent to me, that there's something, a sentence in there that says something about how the spiritual world doesn't mean to punish man but they don't understand spiritual law. And I think that I have a little thing has come to me that has given me a little more inspiration into what that could mean. In that one time I had this experience, I was cleaning the blinds in a house and there were a lot of windows and I had to take them down and put them in the bathtub and clean them in the solution and then put them back up. And I was tired and it was hard back work. And this thought came to me that here I am doing this on my own. Where is God in this? How I'm just doing this work. Do you know what I'm saying? This is just me brooding this out. And it was a very sneaky suggestion. And as I started working, I thought, "What? How do I go against that? Because what's the truth there?" And the angel thought came to me, "Well, how good would you be doing if you didn't have life?" if you didn't have intelligence, if you didn't have mind, do you know what I mean? How would this project be going without those things? You know what I mean? And it humbled me to realize, so even though the eyes are telling me there's no God here helping me with this hard work, do you know what I'm saying? That angel message was an answer to that. And that's how sneaky that the carnal mind seems to be in disassociating us with God and making us think in some regard, like when there's a big storm and people are having to go in and save people, for instance. A lot of those workers feel like they're fighting against these forces that people attribute to God in order to get these things done, when the God is actually is in the life and in the love and in that's even working to bring any kind of order to disorder.
Well, those beliefs that you mentioned, that's old theology, and that's how it creeps in, because with old theology, you get these beliefs that God, you have to fight against God and God takes good from you, and those are all false beliefs, which Christian Science comes to change, because our God is a God of love who only gives love. And of course, he's by our side in every task we do. Walk with love along the road, his strength he will renew. All these beautiful hymns that we sing to ourselves, these are our presence and power of God with us. Whatever work we're doing, he is with us in it. And it's only these false beliefs that we have either, it's been passed down through generations and we've got it sort of by osmosis, or we've been taught it in churches, maybe we attended it as a child. But these are false beliefs about God. And he certainly isn't in the storm. He's in the, you see, Jesus calmed the storm. He's what calms things and what helps us in our everyday work, every moment of every day.
And the Lord was not the Lord was not in the wind. The Lord was not in the fire. Remember? And we even have in many of our laws the phrase acts of God that refer to disasters, right? Mm-hmm. So you're right. I mean, this false thought is embedded in our society in many ways. And it's all false. It's all, and these guys, Nimrod and his follower, thought that the good that they obtained was a result of their own hard work.
Yeah.
The blessing of God.
And Thomas highlighted that they imagining a prosperity they enjoyed was not derived from the favor of God, but supposing that their own power was the proper cause of the plentiful condition.
Well, anything, I think if we are expressions of God, then anything that we do, whether we've done it for years or not, anything that we do that we start off by separating ourselves from him as the giver of the strength, giver of the wisdom or anything to do it, if we start off like that, we're about to, you know, it becomes more arduous, I feel. And it either fails or it becomes more arduous. So the humility to know that at all times we are expressing God, we are reflecting him, that's essential to always know.
There's a little prayer I say every morning. We read it. Do every task unto the Lord.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you all.
And how long did Jesus have to wood till God told him to go about his ministry?
Right.
he did plenty of
manual labor. And I certainly have spent a lot of time washing Venetian blinds in the bathtub. Oh, my God. So I know what an arduous task that is. Oh, boy.
I just wanted to read something I found in Visions of Mary Baker Eddy by Gilbert Carpenter. He said that one thing that enables man to function under the human mind is its apparent stability, the fact that the great majority of people think alike. The breakup of this uniformity would cause Earth to appear like a madhouse, a Tower of Babel, with each individual appearing to each other to be crazy. And that sure made me feel like sometimes that social media, you know, seems to be saying like everybody's crazy, everybody's, you know, going off the rails. So it's, gotta be wary of a Tower of Babel at the moment, I feel.
Thank you very much. Well, most definitely.
That's good, because there are a lot of Towers of Babel going on it appears anyway, going on in the world today. But they are, but these are wrong beliefs coming to the surface to be destroyed. And that is the attitude that we need to take when we get confronted with these so-called Towers of Babel, appearing to be people hating one another, appearing to be whatever. It's the false belief coming to be destroyed, which is why the Tower of Babel had to be stopped.
And it was.
And it was. And every other tower that comes to us has to be stopped.
And it will be.
And it will be. Exactly.
It's self-destroying error.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I wanted to mention an interesting commentary I found about doing things humanly well, how that can kind of thoroughly mislead us and misguide us, right? So it talks about making the brick and where they burn them. So it says that typically they would dry the bricks in the sun, but they burn them, then that makes them insoluble, and they're like cement. And it says here in quotes, this is from Eliot's commentary for English writers, that they were virtually indestructible. So if we think about this, they were making these bricks and building this tower to a human perfection. They were doing it very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And see, if you think about this, when we go about doing projects, whether it's washing Phoenician blinds, that's the topic of the morning, you know, or whatever. And we're saying, oh, I'm doing a great job. I'm being very thorough. This is perfection and everything. And that if, like I said before, we look in the God or the man, if we're looking to man like ourselves, like, I'm doing this very well. Because in this case, they were building the tower extremely well. Those bricks are virtually indestructible, repeating that again. So I want to point this out, so that doing things humanly perfectly, you know, can misguide us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I think we need to put this in perspective, don't we? Because God does, divine mind does unfold for us improvements in our lives. And Mrs. Eddy does say somewhere that, you know, human progress has to come. And we are making human progress. But we need to keep in mind, what's the purpose of the progress?
Exactly.
If you do something really well for the wrong reason, it will turn to, you know, garbage. And it should, because it has to. And it gets back, what is the motive for doing anything? And if we have the right motive, God will give us whatever we need to accomplish whatever his purpose is.
And these guys are God. What, Laura?
To me, what she just said means that the source is God.
Right.
Exactly.
The thing comes from God to accomplish his purpose. Not our purpose, man's purpose.
And the purpose is to glorify God, right? So that's kind of the difference between Nimrod's idea of him being great and making the people great, and Noah getting the message from God to build the ark. You know, Nimrod didn't get his message from God to build a tower. He got that from arrogance and vanity and you know, all sorts of messages that weren't from God. So that's the difference, glorifying God or our seeming self that we think we are.
Yes, thank you.
And Noah looked insane to other people, and Nimrod looked admirable
to a lot of people.
Yeah,
yeah, we don't know how many people thought he was wrong. You know, there were probably people around who thought the Nimrod was just an arrogant jerk.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Because it did say, this is not a kingdom, but Nimrod's kingdom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was, he must have really thought some big of himself.
Mm-hmm. One of the citations from last week's lesson or the week before came to me that is kind of what we're talking about here. The one that talks about when we endow matter with vague spiritual power. And I kind of have a little bit of a summary of that that I had come to me last week with that. When we endow matter with vague spiritual power, we live in the uninspired mortal perspective. And we discern, we disown the Almighty. This purely mortal perspective boils down to two sad choices. One, the atheist perspective, that matter is self-evolved and self-governed and a power in and of itself, thus leaving the Creator out of his own universe. Or number two, the old and still dominant theological view, which is that matter is the product of spirit and God is the creator, its creator. This view makes God responsible for all disasters, physical and moral, as their source, and makes him guilty of maintaining perpetual misrule in the form and under the name of natural law. This is why Christian Science is so important. It gives man an escape from those two checkmate perspectives. Christian Science is revealed theology, and it says matter can make no conditions for man. All is infinite mind, and it's an infinite spirit, and it's infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. And if we think out from this inspired perspective, we find a divine principle or a Christ science that we can escape the discouragement and tragedy of the other two perspectives. And this brilliant third perspective, inspired perspective, is what Mary Baker Eddy gave as a gift to the world. And it puts material sense in question under the light of interrogation instead of God.
Yeah, thank you. And that gets us back to our hymn, doesn't it? All glory be to God Most High. In other words, higher than all of these false beliefs.
I would, if I may, going back to what I think it was Gary brought up about not everybody was going along with this Nimrod's idea of building this tower. Matthew Henry, I'll just read this, it's just one sentence. This is Pius Eber, and I think he was a descendant of Shem, is not found among this ungodly crew, for he and his are called the children of God. Their souls join not themselves to the assembly of these children of men. And I thought that was an interesting little side note there that he put in. So not everybody was up for this. And also something that I was thinking about was when Florence was talking about, and I don't remember exactly what she said, but when you're disobedient to God, and this comes up daily, as you talk about how all these people are so anxious and have all these mental health problems and depression and everything else, and it's from going away from God. And so, you know, this all goes together, and we see it today.
Thank you.
Yep, in spades.
And back to what Tom said, you know, the Titanic was supposedly well made, wasn't it? dare I say, the Trade Center. I mean, you know, these huge, big monuments, unless the Lord build the house.
They labor in vain.
It's not built.
May I share something about that now?
Please, yes.
This is from Herbert Eustace. It's about Benjamin Franklin in 1787 at the Constitutional Convention when everything was falling apart. He stopped it, talked about how God even knows what the sparrow cannot fall to the earth. And he said, I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his, God's concurring aid, we shall succeed in the political building no better than the builders of Babel.
Thank you.
Benjamin Franklin.
And this is what America was based on, that we have to be built on God. And if we lose that, we have lost it all. And that's what we're facing these days.
Yep, exactly. And when the first Constitutional Congress got together to try to draft the Constitution, they all argued with one another and they couldn't agree on anything. And Benjamin Franklin, thank God, said, all right, let's stop. Let us pray and come back together after we have prayed. And after they prayed, they came together and they started to make progress.
Yeah, and this was from the line of light, which I think it came from Thomas, right?
Yes.
And it says, America was in no way merely a political experiment. It was the answer to the deep spiritual necessity of man's oneness with principle. And when at the Constitutional Convention, when at the end of weeks of stress and effort, failure seemed to face them in 1887, Benjamin Franklin said, if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. Yes, that's what Chardel said. That's the end of the quote. Nothing animated the founding of this nation except the one purpose to be alone with God and worship him after the dictates of a conscience untrammeled by ecclesiastical or any other tyranny. So thank you for that, Tom. From the line of light, Herbert Eustace.
Well, I kind of wondered if Nimrod, being the great grandson, that he thought he knew better than maybe Noah. Maybe that old generation didn't really know what they were doing.
Of course he did.
Yeah, kids always think they know better.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Of course he did. Yeah.
Second and third and fourth generation.
Yes. And that somehow the old generation had the wrong sense and needs to be thrown out.
Yeah.
Right. Old fashioned.
Right.
Well, he proved how wrong he was.
Yes.
And he proved to us how wrong that thought is.
Yes.
Are we on number four yet, Tom?
We are. Do you want to say the question?
Why did God stop the Babylonians from building the tower, and what was the result? Well, they were disobedient, and they were punished by not understanding one another. And I think it's important to say, God did not punish them.
Yes.
God does not punish.
Dang.
Their disobedience punished them. God did not cause the confusion. Their disobedience caused their own confusion, or rather, their disobedience is confusion.
And it's so interesting how the punishment always fits the crime. So, you know, I mean, that was the perfect punishment. They couldn't understand each other. They couldn't get together. they couldn't get together to do things. They just were all separated and had to figure things out on their own without any other erroneous influence, shall I say.
Because we know that God doesn't give confusion. He gives understanding.
Yes.
And he doesn't scatter us. He unites us. So if you see, you know what's going on.
You know what's going on. Thank you.
It's interesting. A story that starts with one language and one speech ends up with a scattering because it wasn't based on God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about this based on God. So I want to mention, which is in the Bible notes, and I think someone else brought this up earlier about what Josephus wrote. I thought this was really, really interesting. But essentially, he's saying that people were looking to Nimrod, right, the mighty one of the world, so to speak, instead of God. And he says here that he gradually changed the government into tyranny. So if we abandon God and look to some human or humans or to ourselves, where does that lead to?
Disaster.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And don't we see it all around us in the world today? I mean, it should be pretty clear, especially clear to Christian scientists who are practicing real Christian science.
Yeah. There should not be the confusion in our thinking. We should see clearly what's operating and how to add it and the prayers to say, and we should see it clearly if we are really demonstrating the science. It brings clarity, not confusion.
This is why I like Herbert Eustace in his article, Dictatorship. He says, the Christian scientist detects the evil which masquerades as good back of the false concept of dictatorship. He never loses sight of the ruthless endeavors of malicious minds to dominate. God's way of imparting good is the exact reverse of domination. It is always by way of reflection.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that is why America is unique among governments in the world, because its basis is every individual is first governed by God. Mm-hmm. And that the only purpose of any human government is to protect that right and not interfere with it. And anytime anybody wants government to interfere, human government to interfere with any of your rights, you know where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And it is destruction.
You know where it leads.
And you know where it leads.
Tyranny.
And our job is to prevent that from happening.
And we as scientists must do this work or be held responsible for being left undone. And, you know, we steered our way through that pandemic because that was trying to get more and more government control over the people. And
and it was purely manufactured.
It was all manufactured to do that. And these things that happen are not just coincidences or some random thing happening. We have learned this in this church. We have studied the Communist Manifesto. We know how these isms work, and we must stay awake and alert to it and not be dismayed by it, but to be victorious over it.
Amen. And Mrs. Eddy was facing it in her time, too.
Yeah, it seems to be a reoccurring theme.
Well, it's been a theme for all of mankind,
yes.
For all of history,
yes.
Because the devil is at work 24/7, and Mrs. Eddy, you know, spells it out very clearly that, you know, the serpent is nipping at our heels.
And as Florence has emphasized, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy has been out how long, Florence?
It will be 150 years next year.
Mm-hmm. So that should make a big difference in the progress and growth of mankind. You know, each time we can say in the Old Testament, they didn't have Christ Jesus at that time. So now we have Christ Jesus. After 200 years, that kind of started to collapse. Now, again, we have science and health. We have Christian Science. These things should be absolutely improving the race of humankind to what it is, spiritual ideas. There's not two of us, there's one.
And we should be not only better off, which we are, but we should be better.
Yes.
Yes.
And we today are enough to convert the world if we're of one mind.
That's right.
Thank you. Yeah.
I like to add to that, that from Acts, because to me the Pentecost was the counter to this.
Thank you.
And I'll just read a couple of the verses from Acts 2. When the day of Pentecost was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And they were all filled with the Holy Ghost and began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. And there were dwelling at Jerusalem Jews, devout men, and of every nation under heaven. And then they understood each other.
Thank you. Very important. That is, that's the opposite of the Tower of Babel was this. And remember these stories, now, Florence, those stories in San Francisco about revivals and things where people were speaking in one language and having all kinds of healing going on. I can't think of the name of
Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. So yes, it does go on. It does go on. And it is going on. We probably don't hear about it in the news, but it is going on, these revivals and the turning to the Father. It's going on.
So I just wanted to point out.
Let's say.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say all these erroneous beliefs and all this stuff going on seemingly in our world is just the evil coming to the surface to be destroyed, as we have said before.
Thank you. Yeah,
yeah,
this has to happen.
That's why we shouldn't get discouraged when we see garbage happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those of us who live in America, we are in kind of a bubble because, you know, as we talked about the founding of this country, and there's so many people these days who read the Bible and they pray. But if you look out over the world, is what I think is probably most common for the human condition is tyranny as opposed to freedom. Mm-hmm. So we are obviously know countries like Cuba and Venezuela and North Korea, but, you know, there are many, many others. Mm-hmm. There's Turkmenistan. There's Eritrea. There's Equatorial Guinea, there's Myanmar, and so on. We can name more countries where there's just absolute tyranny going on. Mm-hmm. And nothing seems to want to change that tyranny in those countries.
Well, they are rising up, they are voting. There's a major change in Argentina this year. Or a major change in England, because there's a lot of tyranny there now. So it's, you know, tyranny comes to the surface and then people revolt. It's like the pendulum that Mrs. Eddy refers to in the textbook.
Yeah, it Gary swings said back and forth. Every 200 years there has to be this cleansing or something.
Yeah. On average, democracies last maybe 200 years. They turn into tyranny, and then people have to revolt. Well, we have the right kind of revolt in Christian Science, the righteous revolt. And it's up to us to do it.
Because who else knows the allness of God and the nothingness of of evil and matter. I mean, there's no other religion that teaches that. And what other answer is there but that? And so this is why what we do now is so important. And I saw somewhere recently, you have a problem, you turn to the Bible. You have emotional problem, you turn to the Bible. You have financial problems, you turn to the Bible. You have health problems, you turn to the Bible. The Bible is the rock, as the lesson Golden Text says, about God being the rock. It is the one place we go to for answers. And that's why these Bible studies are so incredibly meaningful. Thank you, Tom.
Yes.
Yeah, we should be discouraged when we hear these things in the world, because we're always praying that evil gets exposed.
Yeah, that's right. So when it does.
So here it is.
There it is.
And I think it's also important that when a leader comes in a country that's doing good for the people, then he doesn't get killed, as it has happened in Africa many times.
Exactly.
Thank you. I know.
Yes.
And why are the ones sometimes that seem to be doing the most good are the ones that become the targets? So we must pray for their protection in every nation, and that the freedom does come to all these nations that Tom mentioned and many others. And as Gary said, it's happening in some places. Thank God for that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's in Collectanea. It talks about how we have to pray that our work isn't taken from us. Mm-hmm. So the same for them. You know, they have their work to do. It can't be taken from them.
Thank you.
Very good. Very good.
For a little encouraging note, on the noteworthy news on the church website, it is called The Blessing. And it's 154 nations singing this blessing. It's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, the children.
Thank you. Yes, Dale found that. It's just beautiful. It unites us all. And we all are united. We all do love each other. I know we do. We all want the same things.
Yes.
It's just all this talk and error that would try to make us or appear to be otherwise. We are united, brothers and sisters. Our grandson, he's an only child, but he's always talking about his two little Sunday school friends as his brother and sister, because they all feel this
family of God.
Family of God.
It's a beautiful bond between them.
Yeah,
it is. And so it is with all of us. All of us here, all of us in this church, we have that unity of purpose. This work we're doing is the most important work in the world, and we are united, standing side by side with each other in this work and loving each other. It's tremendous.
Our family is those who do the will of God.
Yes.
All over the world.
And it's all over the world, and we love you all so very much.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
We love you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for participating on this Saturday morning. We'll have the next one coming up in a few weeks. We'll let you know.
Yeah, this was wonderful, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a great, wonderful.
Thank you, Tom.
The idea.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, thank you. And
thank you, everyone.
Thanks for everybody's input. That was wonderful. So great discussion. Very informative and lively. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry,
thank
so
thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Bye for now, everyone.
Thank you.